Welcome back, fellow humans and mutants alike. My name is Kyle. I'm with Danny. We're talking X-Men once again, returning to the realm of Camelot and Otherworld. That's right. We're talking Excalibur this week, issue number 4. Last week, it was an okay issue last Excalibur. It was an okay issue, right? We kind of got a little bit of redundancy, right? We went back to Otherworld. We got some like overdramatic, like, he's my brother. He's my baby brother.
Yeah.
I'm just like, and it just felt like you did this already in issue 1. So it felt like a retread a little bit, but what did you think of last week's issue?
Well, the same thing. It felt much more of like a reiteration of what we already kind of got the gist of, and there was no real payoff. It was just more of like a delay on the inevitable clash of Betsy and Brian coming together. But it could have been almost done in one of the previous issues, and then we progressed on to this one. Like, this issue felt more like it should have happened before this. Mm-hmm. That was my whole takeaway of that going into this as well, and coming out of this.
But let's move forward. Moving on, what do you think of this cover artwork? We get Shoujo fighting Betsy. Weird. I dig it, but
I don't know if that's Shoujo though. I think was the dragon that Shoujo fought, or the one that they originally dealt with.
Okay, that's okay.
I might be wrong. That might be him because he's got the like roses all around him and stuff.
Right.
Dragon face, so it might be Shoujo. I could be wrong. But I do like the artwork. It is a really good artwork. Like, it is. It also kind of echoes that kind of fantasy kind of vibe, like that Arthurian legend style kind of fantasy.
Sure. Marcus Toe. I think he's doing a good job with this. Did he do the last issue, Marcus Toe?
Of Excalibur specifically, I think. Marcus Toe dived into that one. Let's see on Excalibur. Yes.
Cool.
Yes, it is Marcus Toe.
Right on. Yeah, I'm digging what he's doing. I even like I like Remy's jacket change. It looks very, very Assassin's Creed, as I mentioned before. And we see more of it in this issue, but let's get into it. You ready?
Yeah, it's T.D. Howard as well. It's been them from the get-go.
Yes, T.D. Howard.
This has been their brainchild, and I'm liking it so far. It just hopefully they don't get too much in like the retread of like dragging plot devices out, and we get more conclusion faster on.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see. We'll
see. Like all Excalibur, this is. This issue will not go on forever, or this series will not go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it will not go on forever. But we start with Rogue, and she's still in floral coma. We got Remy; he's hanging out, just like I'm trying, pretty much. He's just like, I don't know what to do. I'm trying, and then he's just like, "Fuck it, I'm going to London. I'm gonna go assist. I'm out." Gonna go do something. He has some energy, some pent up energy. He needs to get off, pretty much, it seems.
Yeah, he's just sitting there staring at her in what looks like almost like a memorial service. Like, I think of like Lenin and how they did him in Russia. Like, it's just like a glass case and it's all this floral arrangement. It's really weird, but you know, she's still alive, so that's why I get he's still connected to her. Yeah. But I mean, being that close and not being able to like help her has put him in such a mood of just like ineptitude. He's like, you know what? I gotta bounce. I can't just chill here because this is driving me nuts. And he's like, he's off kilt too. You could tell that he's kind of lost his edge.
Yeah.
He's flustered and unfocused, especially when you cut to the next part and he just kind of goes off the rails.
Yeah. And we kind of see this, right? He was kind of silent and sad for like those first that first issue, that second issue, and then now we're seeing like him getting super angry, super annoyed, super aggro, and he goes through the portal and he's just going, what is this,
Buckingham Palace,
right? Yeah, okay. And he's just walking up to the gates and he's getting a lot of hate. Yeah, I would say a lot of hate.
That's pretty cool how they drew the bottle being thrown at him.
Yeah.
And he catches it, like, just reacts instantly. You see it in the top panel, and then in the middle, it's like, boom, he caught it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. So, yeah, someone throws a bottle. He turns around, catches it, and he ignites it, throws it back at him.
This is the tipping point.
Yeah, right, and this is him going, this is him kind of tipping, going crazy, losing the edge, if you will.
Yeah, he's off the rails now, Gambit. He's not playing it safe, trying to, like, because you could see it was boiling, like you said in the previous issues, it was starting to boil to the surface, and now he's like, fuck it, I'm tired of this.
Yeah,
I had to deal with this shit. Rogue for years already. Finally, yeah. You touch each other, and you put her in a fucking glass case. Fuck this shit.
But moving forward, black air, black magic. Mutants around the world are flocking to the island nation of Krakoa for safety, for security, and to be part of the first mutant society. With her brother Brian possessed by an evil sorceress, Betsy Braddock has become Captain Britain and must bear the weight of all that name entails. Rogue has been trapped in a mysterious floral stasis, and while Apocalypse has been playing nice, Gambit sees evil lurking beneath the veneer of magic. At least Excalibur is back from Otherworld, and they know the rules of this world. Right? Right? Right, Danny?
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything in the other world makes sense. I mean, with their unicorns and dragons, that's just science. The rules.
Science. So we cut to Richter and Jubilee, and they're just walking, and they're talking about more or less like the UK and how it's more than just Britain, talking about, like, there's the Republic of Ireland and the Northern Irish people and whatnot, and telling them the diversity of the UK.
Yeah, Richter's kind of playing the role of the majority of the world who lives outside of the UK as, like, their kind of ecocentric views mm-hmm. washed over it. Because she has to break it down because he's coming into it, and he's like, well, aren't they all English? Aren't the British the English? And she's like, well, no, because there's different facets of people who consider themselves British, where there are other peoples who don't consider themselves British, but they live in the UK.
Exactly.
And it's a very common misconception that you would be as a foreigner outside the United Kingdom, because the dichotomy of, like, how the governments work and the different factions within Ireland and Scotland and in Wales and how they play off of each other versus, like, Brexit and how the European Union has shifted now that not only Scotland wanted to become independent, but Britain itself wanted to become independent from the EU. Mm-hmm. So it's so convoluted that it's like, I almost sympathized with Richter. I was just like, okay, some of these I did know. But then other things I was like, you're right. That is super weird how their governments play off of each other. Like, I like this narrative because it kind of touches on us as the reader on how messy things are on the ground floor already in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, as they're walking, he's talking about earthquakes and how Apocalypse is trying to help his powers. And then he takes note. He's just like, he prefers A. They're doing this again. Where they're like, excuse me. He prefers A. It's a Will Actually moment.
Yeah, it's like them resting on that trope is so frustrating. But I do like the contrast between how you can tell the demeanor towards Apocalypse is different on Richter's side versus Jubilee.
Yeah.
Jubilee's constantly like Gambit, where it's like, I don't trust the dude.
Yeah, skeptical.
Like, he's like, well, he's A, by the way, and he's not so bad.
Not bad. Yeah, he's really like, he connects with him. He listens.
But this is how Apocalypse gets you.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll he finds a mutant who has dysfunctional powers or is dysfunctional in some way, and he lures him into a sense of comfort, gets him to like him, and then boom, you're Horseman Apocalypse. I think he might be grooming Richter here. We don't know.
He could be. He did embrace him really, really fondly on the last cover.
So lovingly. So lovingly. He just can't quit Richter.
Yeah. And as this is happening, we just get a big boom. And Richter's just all like, maybe Gambit should talk to him too. And Jubilee's just all like, nah, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Gambit don't want it. He's on her page. He don't want even listen to Apocalypse's nonsense. He wants to swing first and ask questions later. But I really hope that was the bottle. Like, that explosion was the bottle that he ignited and caught before we cut to this little interlude that was happening in Tampa.
Yeah.
That's a hell of an explosion.
And we cut to Gambit outside. Just he's holding, like, a giant piece of paper, card, maybe.
I was figuring that out, too. I was like, I thought maybe it was, like, cardboard or something. Or, like, a newspaper. But it's so funny, the concept. Yeah, like, or yeah, a protest sign, like it's cardboard, yeah. Oh man, yeah, it's gotta be. Yeah, so he's just like turning the cardboard into a WMD.
Right.
That's poetic though, because it's all anti-mutant propaganda, and he's literally using their propaganda against them.
Yep.
There's no metaphor here, people.
So we get Jubilee and Richter kind of stepping in, helping out. And as they're doing this, they kind of we get Betsy and we get good old Hot Knives.
But don't gloss over how easy it was for Betsy and Richter to like join in the fray, because they were like, even Jubilee came out with the voice of reason and is like, Gambit, like, you know, we were supposed to behave. And he's like, but they threw a bottle at me. Jubilee and Richter are like, oh, cool. And they just throw.
Yeah, that's all they needed. That's all they needed. And they're like, all right.
All they needed was just a little bit of justification. And Richter is just burying people. Do you see that? Like, he's just like throwing earth at them. And Jubilee is like, she's like a kid on 4th of July morning. She's just like lighting people up.
It's great.
I love that. I had kind of a Monty Python moment, because like the people were like, look, the mutants are oppressing us. Look, mutant acts are terrorism. They're terrorists. We're being oppressed. They're dangerous. Which I don't blame them. I mean, I totally, if I threw one guy next to me threw a bottle at some dude and their friends came out and buried me underground, I'd be like, yeah, these things, they're ridiculous. Betsy like rolls out and is like, calm down, everybody.
Yeah, she calms them down with hot knives behind, and she comes out and pretty much says that all right, we're pretty much accountable to the queen, and she wants to know who I'm working with, and I told her we're Excalibur branded. We branded ourselves, the queen approved of it, she signed off on the thing, and this is what we're doing now. Pretty much.
I love the name review. Took us 4 issues, and now we're officially reading Excalibur.
Yeah.
Ta-da. It should have been Excalibur ? For like issue 1 through 3. Oh man. But you know, I dig it. It feels right. It feels like she's embracing the role and that they're really going to be a true like Excalibur team from this point forward. Because they're on the books. The Queen's made it official.
Yeah. So that's interesting. But we go to ACT. ACT, protecting and dividing the United Kingdom and Underworld. Explain ACT, Danny.
It seems like this is the way for them to compartmentalize the concept of handling the Underworld issues within the United Kingdom while still remaining their sovereignty in effect. Like it's this weird political paradigm, so they can understand how the authority of the crown bleeds down to authority of what happens in Otherworld, and how Captain Britain is the overseer of kind of that authority, acting as on behalf of the crown, essentially. If Otherworld is being overseen by Captain Britain, it still is fair to understand that Captain Britain is being overseen by the crown. That's why there's a few caveats here where I was noticing when reading about how the captain can be called upon to be a representative not only against Otherworld, but in matters for shielding the crown before any issues. So it almost starts to sound like Captain Britain not only has to be this kind of peacekeeper in Otherworld, but Captain Britain can be used as a shield herself against issues against attacks against the crown. And it's kind of scary to think about that, because this kind of cements Betsy's lineage, or her, not her lineage, but her loyalty to the crown by doctrine. She right. has to stand and defend the crown, but does she, will she do that against the mutants? Or, you know, anyone that could be considered an ally that stands
right.
And that's, I caught that at the end there, and that was really, that was all of the other part where it's kind of like how her authority works in Otherworld and how the queen is kind of watching over her and overseeing the relations and that. That was cool, but this little, like, caveat, the last line at the end, where it's like, oh, wow, she could just pick up and use Betsy as a pawn and say, like, you now have to fight against Krakoa.
Like, yeah.
This could be foreshadowing of some, like, future issues. But it's almost like you could miss it, too. You'd be like, okay, that makes sense. But you're like, wait, there's deep meaning to that. I like that.
What's the difference between them and, I guess, MI-13?
I think this one is more like a special task force, where MI-13 is more like a government organization. Like, Excalibur almost feels like this almost may be a loose connection, but like an X-Force.
Right. But
for otherworldly issues, so like they could put it on X-Force to just instantly, or like Excalibur to just like instantly wipe out things, where they're like, oh, just, you know, there's this organization in Otherworld that's, you know, trying to stand against the crown. I need you to go there and just take care of them and deal with it, either politically or aggressively. Whereas like MI-13 seems like it's more of an investigatory, a data gathering, closer to like an NSA style kind of, they probably work intermittently with each other, but it seems like they're more of a pen and paper end, and the other one's more like a boots on the ground end.
Okay. That's interesting. Mm. It's good to know. You heard it here first. Moving forward, we get the group, we get the gang, and like in their meeting, they're having a meeting, standing meeting. Most of them are standing. They're talking about meeting up with Coven Kaba, pretty much, which is more or less, what's her name? I already forgot her name.
I forgot her name as well. It's been a while since we've dove into Excalibur, so yeah, I'm not pulling up her name right off the top of my head.
Mariana Stern.
They're parlaying with her because on behalf of the queen, there's a lot of fears. I guess there was a note that the Coven of Cabo got to the queen before they did, and this has created kind of a rift, and the queen wants it addressed and essentially is having them parlay with each other to kind of sort things out.
Yeah. And we get Gambit, and he's just all like, I'm more concerned with Rogue. And we get Apocalypse, like, yeah, I'm inclined to agree with Gambit. And freaking, he's so jumpy. He's all like, are you? Are you, motherfucker? Are you? I feel like he's gonna like try to fight him right now.
Yeah. He's just like, you looked at me wrong, man. I just can't stand you. You did this, is your fault. I'm gonna blame you for all this. And until things get restitution is done, I am gonna be pissed.
Yeah. But then he's like, A's just like, yo, I need you for this thing. Captain Britain's gotta go do her thing. She has services and whatnot. And he's just like, I need you and I need Richter. He specifically says, I need a master of Earth and a master thief for this mission, more or less.
What a D&D campaign they are building here.
Right? And look at Remy's face. Look at Gambit's face.
He's so
skeptical as fuck. It was resentful, skeptical. Yeah. All of it.
Yeah, he looks like he just ate the most sourest candy you could eat. He is falling apart there. But yeah, like they acknowledge that, you know, Captain Britain's allegiance is now being pulled and her duties are being pulled somewhere else. So if we're going to take care of the Rogue thing, then it's going to have to be us. But Apocalypse has some wild quest to send them on to solve this issue. He's got the best. He's like, I need a burglar and a guy who's as strong as about 10 dwarves. And we're going to do this. We're going to send you people out into this world. It's a good start.
It's a good, good start to two missions pretty much going happening. But we cut to a different story. We cut to
Krakoa.
We cut to Krakoa. Wait, they're on Krakoa too, right?
But we cut to. They're either Krakoa or one of the like weird.
It could be the lighthouse, yeah.
It's lighthouse because he's Gambit's sitting on the stairs in the back.
Yeah. Okay, so then the lighthouse. So then we cut to Krakoa and we get Jubilee with Shogo. And they're just hanging out. And as they're walking, we run into Megan Braddock. Megan yep. Braddock, right?
And then the daughter,
Martin. Yeah, and they're just all like, yo, where's Betsy? And Jubilee's like, yeah, she's doing, you know, Captain Britain stuff and whatnot. And essentially they're saying that they came to Krakoa because they were getting persecuted at their mansion place, right?
Yeah, they're like academy that they had.
Or like estate or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she said that here would be a better place to be safe and be with.
Yeah.
Essentially applying family, but Jamie like, cuts her to the punch and it's just like family.
I feel like it's like that creepy dude in like Family Guy, and he's just like with family.
Hello.
Yeah.
He's still rocking that flower in his hair too. He really digs this. He looks like he's some sort of like drunk Greek politician.
Yes, he does, and he's just kicking back still, kicking back, and he's kind of annoying them, right? Right.
He comes on to Megan right away.
Yeah, he's like
from you should be with family and be like, hey, I should look after my husband's wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Jubilee's like, chill out, you fucking gross asshole. Not like
that. It's great.
Not the incest.
Knocks him on his face, which I think this is the second time he's been punched, right? In the face.
I think that's like a running gag for him now. That's kind of his thing now, is he just says like really prude and dickish things and people just like knock him on his ass.
Yeah.
He's on the lounge, so every time they do, he just starts lounging there and he just chills. He's like, all right, cool.
Yeah. It's like, whatever.
I wanted to be horizontal anyways. Fuck this.
And they walk off. As we go to the next page, we cut to the family Braddock, and it's pretty much just a family tree, more
like
or less.
Like an excerpt, because you don't get where like their mother Elizabeth came from, and it just starts at their grandfather.
Yeah.
So John Braddock is the top of the tree, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And then we get James Braddock, Elizabeth Braddock, and then the Braddock family, which is Megan, Brian, Elizabeth, and James.
James Jr.
Jr.
JJ.
JJ.
J. Jonah Braddock. But see, what's this whole thing about the lineage of the Braddock family being such a closely guarded secret? Like, I don't understand why that, like, what's so important about their family line? Is it like they tie back to the original King Arthur, maybe? Or
I have no idea. Yeah, maybe.
I know a little bit about Psylocke, but I know even less about Betsy and her original incarnation, and frickin' Captain Britain even more. I forgot Jamie was even a thing at one point. I was like, oh, yeah, they do. He's like weirdly powerful, too. He looks like a quasi-Proteus.
He is. He was like a leader of the Omniverse at one point, too, right?
Yeah, he became like the Omni-King.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I don't know. Is this necessary? This isn't necessary.
It's foreshadowing something, that's for sure.
You think so?
Oh, totally foreshadowing something. We'll they're gonna reveal that their great grandfather is like Apocalypse or something. But Betsy, I am your father. She's like, no. Can't be.
I can't. It's impossible.
It's impossible. He's gonna cut off her hand with one of her own psychic blades.
Yeah. Oh man.
That's so bad. I hope it happens.
But we cut to deep beneath the moorlands, and we get Richter and Remy, and they're deep diving down to the caverns. And
it almost looks like they're gliding on, like, he's like warping it into like a slide.
Yeah,
and they're like sliding downwards. It looks super fun. It, yeah. Like, they're having the best time. They're just like, yeah, they are. And we're at the bottom, superhero pose.
Superhero pose, bam.
They both have their own iteration of it. If you look in on that panel right next to them, they both have their own take on it. But yeah. Remy's totally upselling his because he's got that duster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Look at that coat.
His bow staff.
Yeah. As this is happening, we get like a big, wait, what are they saying anything? They're just mentioning how Richter's on the A-train pretty much, right? More or less. He's trying to spell the gospel.
Well, remember earlier when he was talking with Jubilee, he was trying to talk about maybe Gambit should talk to Apocalypse, like he kind of segued with that with her. This is just him picking that up with Gambit directly and also trying to explain what's going on with himself. And why Apocalypse needs him, and what's unique about what's going on with his situation. I just like the term woo-woo stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I had to like reread that a couple times. I was like, what does he mean? Woo-woo stuff? Yeah. That is way of saying hokey pokey. Like,
yeah.
It's just such a funny, like, I like how they're trying to make them so they're humanizing like Richter as much as possible and trying to make him super relatable.
He's just like, I don't get this shit, but
yeah. The average Joe is like, as we slide down on this earth, like he's like, you know, we're gonna deal with that hokey woo woo stuff. but you know, like they got down to the earth with no issues, and Gambit's still nonetheless like off of the A train. But he's down with Richter. He even down enough to the point where he's like, you know, I don't agree with you, but I'm gonna save your life right now because you're about to die, buddy.
Yeah. Get out of the way. He just jumps in, like, we get a big ba-boom.
We're surrounded by druids now.
Yeah, and they're surrounded by druids. And apparently Apocalypse probably knew about this and didn't tell him.
Yeah, they almost feel, because, you know, Remy's so suspicious, they feel set up. He's like, this is why Apocalypse didn't want to deal with this himself. He didn't want to fuck with these geomancing druids. Like, they're a pain in the ass. But, you know, Gambit doesn't, you know, slow down at all. He instantly jumps into it. And he's like, well, you can throw rocks at me? I'm just going to blow all the rocks up. Fuck you. It's pretty dope. Because they blew up, like, the rocks on Richter, and Gambit just was like, oh, shit, we're druids. Apocalypse set us up. Well, you know what? I ain't going down without a fight.
Yeah, and they kind of fight him, and then they run off to like the ledge, and they climb down. It looks like.
Well, they book it out. They kind of take a weird like escape route because they're kind of backed into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So they take this like ledge to kind of put some distance between them and the druids, but. Richter wasn't going to let that be the only thing that was going to put some space between them. He literally closed off the wall around them. But they were not... They're not to be trifled with. He tried to block them, and the geomancing druids were just like, hey, this is what we do. We match the earth. We dance with it.
We do that woo-woo shit.
We got that woo-woo shit on lock. So Richter's like, well, fuck this. And just leaps off the edge.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then they go through this very convenient hatch, it looks like.
That Richter creates for him.
Oh, yeah.
Gambit's like, this is so difficult. Like, how are we going to get down? And Richter's like, I'll just make me a path, man. Like, you're working way too hard. Yeah. And it's so perfectly, like, chiseled into the ground. Like, it's got, like, arms, spots for your arms, spots for your feet.
Yeah.
You can just slowly maneuver down. It's pretty epic.
It's nice.
Use the perfect
rest place. Let's side note real quick. Did we ever get like exactly anything as to how Richter's kind of doing good now because what Apocalypse has done for him. He, we just kind of brushed by that a little, didn't we?
He mentioned it a little bit passing in sense of like, because when they were going coming down, Gambit was talking to him about it, and he said essentially to Gambit, he said, "Well, I'll tell you what Apocalypse did. He listened. He listened to me. He understood me, and in that, I got my closure." Essentially, that's what he alluded to, is that he found himself within it. He just needed therapy. That's all he needed. Which was just, he's just unsteady. And that's how it is with most mutants, is like, there's not anything wrong with their powers when they malfunction, usually. It's usually their state of being is under too much duress. And so they're mentally unstable, and thus, you know, their powers kind of react to their mental state of being. They become unstable as well. All they need is some good therapy, and boom, they're off cracking.
Good therapy, people. Go get some.
We joked about Apocalypse sitting on like the chair, and like Richter lying down in that like that bed of dirt, and Apocalypse is like wearing his glasses, going, And how did that make you feel?
Yeah.
This is just a manifestation, Richter, of your anger you have towards your father. You must get over this. This Oedipus complex will not serve you in the long run. And he's like, "Thank you, Apocalypse. You get me." Oh, good time.
Yes, but we get a Richter, and he's kind of a little hesitant to steal these crystals, but he's just all like, give them here. Remy's like, give them. I want them.
Because they're the bones of the dead mutants who fell there from the past that Apocalypse spoke of. He says, he says, this is the resting place of many dead mutants, and their bones are charged with mystical energy, especially or some sort of psychic residual energy that powers them. So he wants them to essentially harvest them so they can get to the root of what's going on with Rogue. And Richter's like, this is a little weird, but Remy's like, fuck it, I'd do anything to save Rogue, so give me these dead mutants. He's already bagging them up. He's like, he's pocketing it already. He's like, this is done. Like, I'm not even debating it.
Yeah, and we get some druids crashing down on them. And as they kind of come down and speak to them. And
they hit them with a curse of some type. They use something besides their they dip away from their geo magic, and they use some of their like second level curse spells. Like, I'm gonna get in your head. It's like a screeching noise to them, essentially. And Richter looks like he's taking it even worse than Gambit. It almost looks like Richter hit his head on something. It's hurting him so bad. Down real quick.
Yeah. And essentially what happens is they see him as a brother, right? As a brother to them, another druid.
Yeah, because he dislodges them with an impressive attack of Geoforce of using his powers. And they're just like, well, wait a second, like, We're kind of the same, you and I. Like, you know, we're very similar. It's just you function differently. And they make that connection like right away. Or at least the druids for the most part. Richter's kinda like, okay.
Right. And they kind of all surround him and then paint his face and wrap him in a cloak.
Yeah. He's a druid to them. They literally refer to him. He says, "You're just a druid of a different type."
Yeah. And Remy's just like, what's happening? This isn't why we're here. Let's go. And the druids give him they kind of charge up the
No, they give him the actual crystal, because
they give him the real crystal, yeah.
Because the other ones were decoys, and that's why that the crystal they give him is glowing, because he said that the decoy crystals had lost their power eons ago, and that they just hundreds of years ago, something like that. And they were like, these are the crystals that actually work. And they're willing to let them have it because they see Richter as one of them, as a kindred spirit. They have that whole line about, you don't stand on the earth, you stand with it. The earth is a part of you, and all that kind of fluff.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, you can have it, but Gambit, you gotta go. And they just kind of like, fucking
throw him off the ledge.
He's gone.
Just opening gas in him underneath him, and they say, "This is not for thieves, though."
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. And Richter tried to save him, though, and it doesn't seem to work out for some reason.
Yeah, he had a moment. Yeah, he had a moment, and it seemed like his powers took too much, and he loses the ledge, and we see Gambit fall, but we cut to the Valiente room, London? Valiant, right? Because they just have E's on everything.
Yeah,
there we go. Valiant room, London. Meeting house of Coven Akaba. And this is where we get Mariana Stern and what's the other gentleman with the beard?
George Carlin? I don't know.
George Carlin.
He's not old enough, I guess. A younger George Carlin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's just another member that is a part of, which is confusing to me because she killed off the majority of, I guess maybe her particular organization, but the way they make it seem is that this was a much greater organization that has existed even apparently longer than Apocalypse. At least that's what the guy boasts. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anything about there being a Coven Akaba much before Apocalypse. I know his clan existed and he joined it, but I mean, I thought they were more of like a rogue band of like hoarding nomads. Like, I never thought that they were like a secret society. Mm-hmm. They were more of like, that's like saying like, oh, you know, the clan of the Mongols has existed before Genghis Khan. And it's like, yeah, of course. Like, they were just a group of people. They weren't like a secret society or anything. But okay, dude. You want to feel special about that.
And we get this guy is talking about how it existed before like Apocalypse, before humans pretty much. And we get Betsy getting aggro, right? She gets a little mad.
Well, he's implying that the humans existed in Clan Akaba before Apocalypse, so he's taking pride in that little factoid, and that's what pushes Betsy over the edge, because she's like, you're just hate-mongering and using propaganda to force your narrative to validate your own existence, and it's just going to lead to a sense of bloodlust and hatred towards her people, and that's why she gets so defensive.
Bloodlust.
Sweet, sweet bloodlust.
The best kind of lust
is bloodlust. Is there any other that really matters?
Yeah. No. And then, so what's going on here? She gets mad. We get Hot Knives holding her back a little bit. And Heaven's like, Betsy, I don't think so. And then she cuts him off and he's just all like, you can call me Captain Britain. Do you forget your mutant too? She's just all like, yo, be a mutant, bitch.
But Captain Britain was never her like mutant moniker. Mm-mm. So it's like, if she's supposed to take pride in that, it's like, I don't know. Well, Pete Wisdom never really had a mutant moniker either.
No.
Unless you want to just call it. He's like, all right, fine. Call me Hot Knives. It's okay. I'm sorry, Captain Britain. We'll just move from here. Because she's already questioning this guy and saying that if you're trying to lure me here to a trap, you're going to regret this. And Pete's like, hey, let's not escalate this. And she's like, why not escalate this? He's clearly talking shit to us, like, and he's disparaging our whole species. And he's not having it, but neither is she. And the guy goes on to like pretty much like go to Ron even more and say, like, you don't realize the hour is far later than you understand, Betsy. Like, you've already fallen into my trap.
Yeah. And they're just like, what? And as this happens, we get they're just all like, you are inexperienced, more or less. And the reason that they're there is the Titans or whatever. What are those? What would you call those?
That I mean, you could refer to them as Titans, but that's more of like a, I would say, like more of like Greek in its
Greek stuff,
yeah. Yeah, in its origin. This is just more of like them releasing kind of some of the great beasts of legend from Otherworld. Because this is the trap that they're already in. He brought them here so he could have them distracted because they already made their pact with Otherworld to release these creatures of destruction at actual strategic locations. I guess you could say monumented locations around the UK. Because you see, there's the Parliament building has a... Was it a Griffith? A Griffin?
Okay.
And then...
Yeah.
Just some sort of Hydra creature.
Hydra dragon. Of some sort. Yeah.
And then a Chimera. Though that Chimera is weird because it's got two goat heads.
That's two goat heads, one snake, and a lion.
Yeah. It's got the wings, which is unique too. So it's got like dragon wings, dual goat heads, a snake tail, and then a lion that's breathing fire. They're like, you know, the normal Chimera isn't like metal enough. We got to step it up a little more. We need one more goat head and get some fucking dragon wings. Yeah, it's breathing fire. Give it the wings. It's already halfway there.
Yeah.
This is all popping off in tandem while they're having this meeting.
Well, they're talking, yeah.
Yeah, which then now puts Betsy into the offense. And she's like, oh, psychic blades. And then, you know, hot knives, not to be upstaged. And he was like, well, look, I could do that too, kind of. Look at our weapon. It's so funny. Every time I fucking see Pete Wisdom using his mutant powers, it's just, I get it's cool in concept, but it looks so weird. He looks like he's wearing one of those cheap, like, Halloween gloves that were, like, too big for your fingers and had claws on them.
Yeah.
Like the rubber ones. Like, that's what he looks like. I see that. Look at my spooky hands. But I do like the quick change in the next scene where you see all the creatures that are being summoned, the mythological beings from Otherworld.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a very nicely done panel.
Yeah, and he's still talking shit, and he's just like, if only the Queen could have trusted Captain Britain to do her job, how can she?
Pretender. They refer to her as
Pretender, and she just stomps off. Her and Pete go off.
And he did have a valid point, because she chose the mantle, or got the mantle thrusted upon her, where Brian chose specifically what to be. He chose the amulet. He chose to be Captain Britain. He made that hard choice where he's just saying, you just had Captain Britain thrusted on you. Like, you didn't have to come to any sort of trial. It was just thrown on your lap. And I'm like, ooh, he got her there with that one. And she was pissed. So she was like, fuck it, we're out of here. Yeah. She says, you know what? I'm done arguing. I'm just going to go kill something.
Yeah, time to punch. Punch
her slice. Solid, though. That's a good storm. She's even got the face for it. The good storm face. Like, ugh.
Yeah. She's not happy for sure.
Look at the anger in that walk.
man. Yeah. So after this, we go to Apocalypse. He's caressing the floral coma rogue.
He's doing his best Gambit impersonation.
Yeah, he's doing his best. He's like, mono me, but it's so bad. It's terrible.
It's all even foreboding. Yeah. Mono me. The room like vibrates.
Yeah, but we get like this I guess what is it, portal, or is it like something coming out of the water, and then
like a vortex forms out of the like ocean and pulls it upwards, and all these weird Cthulhu-esque creatures. I don't even know. Now they're all kind of different.
Yeah, they're all a little slightly different, but they're all coming out, and we get a Apocalypse stating that this is meant to kind of test Captain Britain, and he's talking to Rogue, and he says, "But we know better. We have been working since the beginning, haven't we?" And as he says this, we get Rogue waking up.
Finally.
Yeah.
The big reveal here.
There's
this weird horde of like lizard, bat, chimera looking kind of creatures that, like, falls on the lighthouse. Apocalypse is like, here's the true test. And boom, Rogue wakes up and we fade to black.
Fade And we out. And that concludes this issue of Excalibur. What did you think? How did you like it?
I liked it a lot better than the last issue. I feel like a lot more of the actual buildup was starting to play off now, because you see all the chess pieces now aligned on the board and making their attack moves. But we ended on the attack moves, which is fine, but we made that jump. That big jump is happening. Like, Betsy's going to have to deal with these large mythological creatures. Apocalypse and Rogue are going to have to deal with what's going on in the lighthouse. And you have Gambit now trying to deal with what's going on with them trying to recover the bones from the druids, and Richter trying to get himself, pull himself back together to help as well. A lot of good payoff.
Yeah.
And Richter got his kind of his moment to shine in this, whereas in the other one, it seemed like they built him up as like an emotional wreck, whereas like there were a few times in this where he threw down real well.
Yeah.
But he's using his powers at top notch. He's like, here's an expressway, Gambit. I'm going to throw these like druids over here and like put them in this like wall. I'm going to build us these stairs and this, that, and the other thing. It's like, I'm doing it. And then at the last moment, he got too arrogant. And was like, crap, I can't catch you, Gambit. Sorry.
Yeah. He's just like, son of a bitch.
Exactly. You just have that like weird silhouette of Gambit falling down that chasm and just like, fuck. You let me down, Rester. And I thought you were cool. And I do love it in the beginning when the mutants were like, just like, oh, fuck, you throw a bottle at us. We will respond with excessive force.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. But yeah, I like this issue. It was a good one. It was a better upswing for Excalibur instead of kind of more of a down, like kind of retread.
Yeah. I dug it. I like when Gambit ignited all of Richter's rocks. That was great. On the druids.
Oh yeah, after they like blew up the place and like
yeah.
And then all of a sudden he was just like, you know what? Let's do this right here and let's just deal with these druids and show them how powerful we really can be. And the druids were just like, fuck. I love that response. They're all like falling backwards and like getting launched.
Yep.
Just like, oh, okay. Like you guys got some firepower too. Well, sorry for underestimating you.
Anything that you didn't like in this issue?
I don't have anything sticking out, because I feel like the plot kind of progressed well, so there didn't feel like there was anything that was overlooked or left kind of unanswered, or at least open-ended kind of in like a sloppy writing way. I didn't get anything like that. I did like how they... I did like and dislike how they used the kind of a repeat of the whole, every time we see Jamie, someone's going to punch him. I was like, it was funny, but then I'm like, is this going to become his character? I don't know if I'm okay with that. And they're just constantly punching Jamie in the face all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I get he's an asshole and all, but like, are we going to have to punch him? Like,
every time.
Warp reality. This is, you're going to give him brain damage eventually and he can fuck up something.
Right? He just destroys existence.
Yeah, he has a seizure. And he goes Logan on us and just, like, wipes out half the mutants. Damn it, Charles. You forgot to take your meds.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything that really rubbed me the wrong way in this issue.
It seems like they're treating Richter like an earthbender now, more. Or at least visually.
He didn't have that kind of power set. It was more of, like, earthquakes, I'm Richter. Ah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, he's like the Magneto of, like, Earth. Or like a... Terra from Teen Titans.
Or Terra, yeah. There you go. That's, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I like that. And that's a natural evolution. I mean, even if you go back to Magneto, his powers were pretty blasé in the original iteration. And then later on, he's like, oh, well, I can fuck with the electromagnetic force inside your brain. Exactly. And then like in X-Men The End, he's like, oh, when I die, I just transcend my physical being and manifest as a force of electromagnetic energy. I'm Magneto. I'm awesome. And I'm like, fuck yeah, you are. So I guess this is just Richter's evolution. This is just him getting his powers down. Because, I mean, it would be really hard for him to be viable here if he's just constantly like, well, I'm just going to cause mass earthquakes on everyone. And Gambit's like, that's cool, man. I'm paralyzed. Thanks.
Good stuff. Gambit throwing a bottle at Team Brexit was also a good time. I love that.
Yeah, the whole keep Britain human is totally them playing off of like keep Britain British and all that stuff.
Yeah. So that's fun. I dig that. I'm liking this. I like the artwork. Like I said, Toe's awesome. Marcus Toe's doing a good job. Digging it. Also Apocalypse, man. I love everything about his like design. His new design is very like classical, like looking.
It's almost like neo-Egyptian, like it was kind of, or like Stargate. You can get that Stargate vibe.
Yeah, there we go. I dig it though. But yeah, any last comments, concerns, notes you want to say on Excalibur issue number 4?
Just that I'm intrigued to see who this secret Braddock family lineage line is tied to, like who the person is that they're hiding, that they're hinting at.
Yeah,
I'm hoping they go somewhere with that, and then that just doesn't become a plot thread that gets thrown away.
We'll see. But that will conclude Excalibur issue number 4. Next time we are going to New Mutants issue number 4. So that should be interesting. But until then, be safe, because the mutants are going to kill you. Remember that, Danny. Remember that.
Not the robots, just the mutants.
The mutants this time, yeah. The mutants, not the robots. The mutants are going to kill you. They're gonna metaphorically kill you.
Well, if I throw anything at them, it seems like they will kill me.
Yeah.
Even though most of them have like combat training and are like indestructible, but apparently if I throw anything towards them, they will respond with heavy aggression.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So be careful when you throw bottles, folks.
Yeah, be careful who you throw bottles at out there. Yeah. Remember that, children.
See you next week.